The auction house estimated the value of this fake pearl necklace at $600, but the price went way past that. $10,000, $50,000, $100,000. The people bidding knew it was fake, so what did they see that we didn't? By the time the hammer dropped, the necklace sold for $211,000, 350 times higher than the appraised value. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, great, another rich idiot with more money than brain cells. Like the guy who bought an $88,000 Cheetozard, a Cheeto that kind of looks like Charizard, or the weirdo who spent $6.2 million on a banana duct tape to a wall. We'll get to them later. But this buyer was different. Her name was Linda Resnick, and she was a shrewd businesswoman with a plan. She took this cheap plastic necklace and cloned it. Every pearl, every strand, every detail. It was a perfect replica of a replica. Then she sold over 130,000 of these fake fakes. Linda turned her $211,000 purchase into $26 million of profit. So what did she see that most people missed? Like most products, this wasn't really about the physical object at all. The original necklace belonged to Jackie Kennedy, possibly the most iconic first lady in American history. Jackie was effortlessly elegant. To American women in the late 1990s, Jackie's fake pearls were a symbol of grace and sophistication without excess. For $195 plus tax, shipping, and handling, anyone could buy the feeling of being a little bit like Jackie. Now here's the thing, outside of most Western countries, this necklace wouldn't be worth much. And to someone who had never heard of Jackie Kennedy, it would be worth almost nothing. Value isn't just about what something is, it's about the emotional and cultural context that surrounds it. And it gets even crazier. Linda Resnick didn't just make replicas of Jackie's pearls. She made a replica of a replica of a replica, a tiny pearl necklace for a Jackie Kennedy doll. You just can't make this shit up. Now, I know that fake pearl necklaces for old lady boomers might seem irrelevant to you, but you do the exact same thing every day. You think a pair of Jordans cost $200 because of the materials or performance? Even your money works the same way. Try buying anything with a US dollar when the country collapses. After that, it's just paper. Even gold is just shiny rocks. With the right cultural story, you can make anything worth more than its weight in gold, without ever touching a gram of the real stuff. In 1800s Prussia, the kingdom's ruling family needed to fund a war against France. So they asked the aristocracy to give up their gold jewelry. In return, they received iron replicas, each engraved with the phrase, "I gave gold for iron." Because of this, in Prussian high society, iron jewelry became more desirable than gold. And I mean, sure, gold jewelry meant you were wealthy, but iron jewelry meant you were wealthy, generous, and patriotic. It signaled that you were part of a larger cultural movement, sacrificing for the good of the nation. In that cultural context, iron was more valuable than gold. Ancient alchemists spent centuries trying and failing to turn lead into gold, but they missed the point. They didn't need to change the metal. They needed to change people's minds. Even real jewelry is only valuable because of cultural context. It's based on generations of tradition, symbolism, and belief. But this emotional and cultural value is still real value in some way. This $19 strawberry from Japan is a great example. It's being sold in American supermarkets, and customers are outraged by how insanely expensive it is. And honestly, in an American cultural context, I totally get it. But the Japanese have a popular custom of giving away high-end fruits as gifts. You might think this is crazy, but Americans don't bat an eye at spending $20 for high-end chocolates on Valentine's Day, so is this really that different? You might say that luxury chocolate is way harder to make, but that's debatable. Some Japanese fruit takes decades of selective breeding and highly specialized farming techniques. Maybe you still think the $19 strawberry is stupid, and that's fair enough, but here's another perspective. To the average Japanese person, America's obsession with massive pickup trucks is just as absurd. Americans buy huge, expensive trucks, even if we never actually haul heavy equipment and never leave a paved road. They're both totally unnecessary emotional purchases. Conceptually, is that really much different from a $19 strawberry? Now, in order for any of this to work, the seller needs to provide cultural context. Notice the wooden plaque showing the origin. Without that cultural backdrop, it's just an overpriced strawberry. Even the packaging makes it look like a sacred relic, like the enchanted rose from Beauty and the Beast. That's something that all of the objects we've discussed so far have in common. They all have a marker of authenticity. Whether it's a plaque, a certificate, or an inscription, it's the marker of authenticity that shows that it's a genuine cultural symbol. Things get really weird when you transition from widespread cultural symbols to smaller subcultures. This one single Cheeto sold at auction for almost $88,000. This is Cheetozard, the perfect intersection of three niche subcultures. People obsessed with finding snacks that are kind of shaped like other things, Pokemon collectors, and a third, way stranger subculture that we'll get into in a minute. Now, we've talked a lot today about how good storytelling and presentation can turn ordinary, even ridiculous things into priceless treasures. But what happens when you have something that's actually good, like your work, your ideas, or your design portfolio? That's when great presentation becomes even more impactful. And it's why I want to quickly tell you about today's sponsor, Framer. It's a no-code website building tool that's genuinely impressive. I've been using Framer myself to build a new design portfolio, and honestly, it's game-changing. You don't need to know any code. It feels just like using the design tools you're already familiar with, but instead of static mockups, you're creating real, live websites. Here's how easy it is. I started by picking one of over 1,000 professionally designed templates and customized it to showcase my work. You can even add super slick, no-code scroll animations to make everything feel polished and interactive. The entire process took me just a couple of hours from start to finish. Framer has built-in SEO tools and analytics so you can understand how visitors engage with your work. It also has an advanced content management system to help you manage and organize your website really efficiently. It's perfect for anyone looking to launch a portfolio, marketing site, or a landing page. Framer can help you make whatever you need to put your best foot forward online. If you're a creative person or a marketer who wants to quickly launch a professional, visually impressive website without the hassle, Framer is the tool for you. Go click the link in the description to sign up for Framer for free. And when you're ready to upgrade, use my promo code to get 25% off for 3 months. This one's worth the hype. Go check it out. Back to the video. First, let's just acknowledge the genius behind the name Cheetozard. That pun alone probably added like 10 grand to its value. Then they went even further, cleverly packaging it to resemble a trading card, tapping into the massive Pokemon card revival that began in the 2020s. The seller leveraged that cultural craze to boost the Cheeto's perceived value. Plus, it's a flaming hot Cheeto and Charizard is a fire type Pokemon, so there's that. What makes this wild is that someone was just sitting around scarfing down Cheetos when they picked this one up, paused, and said, "Hey, that's Charizard." And then they actually kept it safe for 2 years before auctioning it off. Imagine how many other Cheeto treasures have ended up chewed and forgotten. Statistically, at least one of you watching right now ate the next five-figure snack because you don't spend your days examining Cheetos like some kind of junk food archaeologist. It's kind of like collectible coins. You've probably had a rare coin worth thousands sitting in your pocket at one point, but you spent it at a vending machine because you're not fluent in the language of coin collecting nerds. Maybe you bought some Cheetos with the coin. The point is, value depends so much on specialized cultural knowledge. But Cheetozard isn't even the most expensive Cheeto ever sold. That honor goes to the legendary Harambe-shaped Cheeto that sold for a staggering $100,000 in 2017. You probably remember Harambe, the gorilla from the Cincinnati Zoo. He became one of the internet's biggest memes. There was even a special salute that Harambe fans would use jokingly to pay tribute. Cheetozard highlights the subculture of auctioning off food shaped like weird things and the Pokemon subculture. But the third subculture, and arguably the most influential, is internet culture itself. The internet runs on absurdity, memes, and collective madness. Selling Cheetozard for a fortune perfectly captures where we're at culturally. We love Pokemon, we love Cheetos, and more than anything else, we absolutely love blowing obscene amounts of money on objectively stupid things and then making rage bait content about it on the internet. How meta. The auction and the price becomes part of the meme and the subculture. There are dozens of other examples of this, by the way. There's the McDonald's Szechuan sauce packet that sold for like 15K in 2022 because it was featured in a Rick and Morty episode. Then there's the chicken McNugget shaped like an Among Us crewmate selling for almost 100K in 2023. Nothing makes sense anymore. Which brings us to the ultimate expression of absurd value, a $6.2 million banana duct taped to an art gallery wall. Originally titled Comedian, this artwork by Maurizio Catalan sold for around $150K a few years ago, but it's gone way up from there. It's almost like the absurdity level has ramped up in proportion to its price tag. It's easy to be outraged by the idea of some rich moron spending millions on a banana, and I think that's kind of the point. Just like Jackie Kennedy's fake pearls, you're not buying the object itself. Sarah Uris Green from the art assignment points out that the artwork isn't really about the banana. In fact, what you're actually buying is a certificate to display the artwork. And I'm sure you're noticing a pattern here with certificates and authenticity. But it's a lot deeper than that. The artwork is all of us. It's the memes, the people who flock to the art gallery, the clickbait articles, and even this video here talking about it. Our outrage gives it power and makes it famous. In my opinion, this is definitely a con game, but that perfectly reflects our current cultural reality. Life right now is absurd, confusing, and weird. The buyer is purchasing permission to participate in the performance of absurdity itself. Some people suspect that the artwork is just a money laundering scheme, and even that's part of the story and its value. The piece is called Comedian for a reason. The artist knew exactly what he was doing. Green goes on to explain that life today runs on outrage, each week offering a new controversy. But it's rarely directed at the stuff that truly deserves outrage, like insane wealth inequality, and instead focuses on trivialities like bananas taped to walls. The art piece represents a larger cultural idea and story. And maybe it sounds ridiculous to spend money on an idea, but Green brings up another great point. If you think it's ridiculous that a story or idea alone can be worth millions, consider this. What is intellectual property? A lot of it's just stories and ideas. What are internet views, influencer clout, and social media likes? It's all just intangible cultural capital. Bananas and Cheetos arts might not be the art we want, but they're the art we deserve. On the note of internet clout, don't forget to subscribe to this channel if you like the video, or don't. Nothing really matters in our $6 million banana world. But anyway, up until now, we've looked at more mainstream subcultures of hundreds of millions of people. But things get really weird when you step into hyper-niche subcultures. People become laser-focused on gear and technical details, sometimes completely losing sight of the original hobby itself. Sneakerheads are the perfect example. They'll spend hours searching for tiny factory errors like misaligned stitching or an off-center logo or even an upside-down logo. These tiny slip-ups can send prices either skyrocketing or plummeting depending on the error and whether the subculture decides that it's cool or not. A pair of Air Jordan 1s known as the Reverse Shattered Backboard sold for almost $150K just because the Nike logo was stitched upside down. Oh, and by the way, there's also an Air Jordan Cheeto up for auction right now. At the time of writing, the highest bid is over $5,000. F***ing idiots with their Cheetos, man. Shit. But here's what's weird. While these enthusiasts meticulously dissect visible details under a magnifying glass, sometimes literally, they're equally obsessed with chasing something you can't measure or quantify at all. Audiophiles will spend thousands on vintage vacuum tubes, meticulously analyzing schematics, filament currents, and plate impedances. Yet what they're really chasing is something totally intangible and subjective. They want some vague ethereal tube warmth or mojo that's impossible to measure. At least with visuals, you can put two things side by side and instantly compare. But audio relies entirely on memory. You have to listen to two different sounds, one after the other. By the time you're making your judgment, your subjective mind has already started messing with you. Audiophiles swear they can hear the difference in warmth from one tube to another, and maybe they can, but nobody else notices or cares. Mechanical keyboard enthusiasts are no better. They'll analyze switch actuation force, carefully lubricate each individual spring, and refine technical details down to like a fraction of a millimeter. And yet, their ultimate goal isn't technical perfection at all. It's finding the perfect typing sound, whatever that means. Maybe they want something clicky. Or something poppy. Or my personal favorite, something thocky. They're looking for a perfect feel that's totally subjective and intangible. And the rabbit hole goes deeper when it comes to musical instruments. You've probably heard of Stradivarius violins. They were made hundreds of years ago by a master violinist. Musicians insist these priceless musical instruments have almost mythical tonal qualities. But blind tests repeatedly show that even expert violinists can't reliably hear the difference between a multi-million-dollar Stradivarius and a well-crafted modern violin. If experts can barely tell a difference, the average audience member at a concert will never be able to tell. But still, the myth lives on. As a bass player, I'm part of a subculture fixated on vintage Fender bass guitars. Early 1960s Fender basses and guitars were very well made, but they've become more expensive than a new car at this point. The thing is, hobbyists still want to own vintage instruments, so collectors have started to obsess over Fenders from the 1970s. The thing is, Fender's quality control by that time was awful. They got acquired by a larger company and they basically just ran quality into the ground. These basses are often heavier than a boat anchor, they have unstable necks that warp like a banana, and they're just not very well made. Don't get me wrong, there are some great Fender guitars from the 70s, but it's very hit or miss. And yet, people gladly spend thousands of dollars chasing that intangible magic mojo that no one can define but everyone swears exists. They'll analyze wood grain patterns, fretboard radius, serial numbers. They're shelling out money for instruments that are often objectively bad because of a feeling that they can't even put into words. And maybe that's the central irony in all these niche communities. The deeper you dive into these tiny, obsessive groups, the more value becomes disconnected from mainstream culture and shared meaning. Instead, it turns inward. It becomes intensely personal and self-serving and borderline neurotic. It's an absurd contradiction, spending thousands of hours and dollars painstakingly dissecting concrete, measurable details, yet simultaneously pursuing something completely invisible and impossible to quantify. These communities aren't looking for wide recognition or mass appeal. In fact, their neurotic, obsessive nature actually thrives because nobody else understands or cares. The value these communities search for is personal and more about the pursuit itself. You're praying the next overpriced vintage purchase finally plugs that gaping hole of existential dread. You can keep buying instruments older than your dad and sneakers that didn't pass quality control, but try not to spiral too hard when you realize it's all a lie. All kidding aside, if you can afford to spend money on this stuff, it's fine, I guess. I buy stupid collectible things too. If you enjoy it, have fun with it, just don't let it own you. You're more than just a collection of things that you possess. What all of these people are searching for is genuine human connection. Ultimately, the objects we own help us feel linked to something bigger, a community, a subculture, or even an entire civilization. That's what $19 strawberries, fake pearl necklaces, and expensive guitars really represent. Tiny slices of connection. Most of us are so disconnected and starved for meaning that we'll pay almost anything for it. Sometimes that search genuinely fulfills us. Other times it just leaves us emptier than before. Eventually, cultural artifacts fade into obscurity. My friend Rafi was telling me how 20 years ago, a beautifully restored vintage wooden radio might fetch $1,000. Today, you'd struggle to get 300 bucks for it. It doesn't matter how old, rare, or cool something is if nobody remembers why they should care. Once you lose the cultural context, the value fades with it. Cultural relevance eventually fades, but personal relevance can endure a lifetime. The most meaningful connections to objects are deeply personal. Imagine your house is on fire and you only have time to save one object. Your choices are a brand new $4,000 MacBook Pro or something worthless to everyone else but deeply meaningful to you. Maybe it's a junky wristwatch from a deceased parent, your scuffed up wedding ring, or a stuffed animal from your first date with your longtime partner. Most people would reach instinctively for the sentimental object. Maybe you're not sure, but the fact that it isn't an easy choice reveals what we truly value. It reminds me of that scene in Pulp Fiction where Butch, played by Bruce Willis, risks his life for an old, beat-up wristwatch. To anyone else, it's worthless. You couldn't pawn it for 20 bucks. But to Butch, it's everything. His father carried it through unimaginable hardships during war, ultimately dying before Butch ever got to meet him. The watch is the closest Butch ever got to his father. Within that personal context, a worthless old timepiece becomes priceless. That is why personal value is so powerful. It transforms ordinary objects into irreplaceable repositories of meaning. The most valuable objects aren't those recognized by broad cultures or niche communities. They're the ones tied directly to our personal stories. The objects worth obsessing over are the ones that remind us who and what we care about. Please consider supporting me on Patreon. My plan is to slowly transition to a more audience-funded model for this channel. That way we can talk about the videos that you care about without having to worry about algorithms or sponsorship or views. I hope you learned something today, and I hope you have a great day.